News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin will meet tomorrow in Alaska to discuss the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Trump previously promised, as you remember, to end the war in one day. But now he's described this first meeting with Putin as purely a listening exercise, with the prospect of a follow-up meeting with the inclusion of Volodymyr Zelensky, who at this moment is in number 10 Downing Street meeting with the British Prime Minister Keir Starmer prior to the summit. I don't know what they are talking about, and Downing Street has given us no details as yet. Perhaps a statement will be forthcoming. Donico Bachoin, who is a professor of politics at TCU and author of Unfinished Empire, Russian Imperialism in Ukraine and the Near Abroad, is on the line to talk about this. Donico, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, first of all, this meeting in Alaska, the fact that it's taking place at all is being seen as a victory for Putin.
Absolutely. The optics are very much in Putin's favor because Putin has been isolated by many countries in the world. And as you know, there's an arrest warrant out for him issued by the International Criminal Court. And there's been a coordinated policy of not doing business with Putin and the Kremlin's political elite now for some years. But, you know, Trump, as is his wont, has unilaterally broken with that consensus by inviting, Vladimir Putin to the United States. That's the first time Putin has visited the United States for a meeting with a U.S. president in a decade. The last time was with Obama at the margins of the United Nations meeting. So it's symbolically bringing Putin in from the cold, and it's treating him as a peer. It's important to emphasize that the United States, as an economy, is 14 times bigger than Russia's, despite Russia's superior geographical size. So this is very much a win, even before negotiations begin, for Vladimir Putin.
Do you find the location of this meeting, Alaska, as curious?
Oh, I think it's symbolically important, of course, because it's former Russian territory. And indeed, Russian social media has been awash with memes emphasizing that point. It was, of course, sold to the United States in 1867 for $7 million. And, you know, the Russian empire extended to North America. Indeed, there was a Russian colony in California until the mid-19th century. Now, Putin isn't coming to Alaska looking for those territories back. He has other territories on his mind. But it has struck, of course, many people that it's at odds with normal diplomacy that the fate of a country, this case Ukraine, is being decided so far away from Europe by two men. In a way, it's Trump's kind of personalization of foreign policy, or foreign policy as theatre. I mean, he sees history as essentially the will of great men. I think he believes that the complexities of the conflict and issues like the occupation of war crimes can somehow be dissolved in photo opportunities and handshakes.
Now, the virtual meeting that happened yesterday, which included European leaders and Zelensky talking to Trump, what do you make of what is said to have come out of those talks?
Well, they have been on message. They have been deliberately upbeat. They are, of course, petrified. And they were very afraid, we'll say, a few days ago. There's been a progressive lowering now of expectations about what this meeting is all about. Because at the beginning, Trump was speaking very theatrically about bringing an end to the war, and that there would be land swaps to the betterment of both Russia and Ukraine. And this, of course, sent alarm bells ringing throughout Europe. And there was that meeting on Monday. Kaja Kallas summoned the foreign ministers of Europe to meet virtually. And then there was this, of course, more recent virtual conversation between Trump and the European leaders, with Zelensky, of course. That was symbolically important, that the European leaders brought Zelensky to Berlin so that he was speaking with them in a unified voice. And it seems, if you are to believe their statements, their public statements, that their worst fears have been quelled for now. But of course, Trump has a very unpredictable and unreliable nature. European leaders know that well. So they know that they've got him. They've got his ear now, but Vladimir Putin will have his ear tomorrow. And they're worried about what those two men might devise and what they might say to each other in a room left to themselves.
Yeah, now that the expression has been used already in many places today, that if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And that's what Zelensky fears, I suppose, when this meeting happens between Trump and Putin tomorrow. the norms of diplomacy have gone out the window. I mean, Witkoff has absolutely no qualifications to be gallivanting around the world as he has been doing. He has no experience. I don't know if the man knows anything about history. I know really nothing about him except that he's described as a real estate genius. But that doesn't help you really when you're dealing with the likes of Putin and Lavrov.
Absolutely. And if the war and the occupation wasn't complicated enough, of course, this is only one of his many briefs. Witkoff, who, as you say, his only expertise is in real estate. His other brief is the Middle East. He's supposed to solve the Russia-Ukraine conflict and the Middle Eastern conflict simultaneously. And he's extraordinarily deferential during his meetings with Putin and very amateur in a very unconventional way. So he arrives to meet Putin. Putin is flanked by senior diplomats and his translators. Witkoff arrives by himself and relies on a Russian translator supplied by the Kremlin for a meeting. I mean, usually you would have in the past, you know, an experienced Secretary of State who's, you know, educated in the skills of diplomacy over many years. And summits would be the product of achieving a large amount already. I mean, presidents would meet to sign off on what has already been agreed, whereas Trump has completely inverted that. And it seems that he's starting the process of negotiations at the summit.
Now, one of the things that has intrigued me about the meeting before between Trump and Putin, where there was no one else present. I think Lavrov was present, but there were only, again, translators, and we don't really know what happened at that meeting. The same would be true of Witkoff. Without an American supplied translator, and depending on the Russians, it means that nobody except Witkoff can tell us what actually was said at those meetings. Do you think it is that if such is the nature of what the conversations that go on between Witkoff and therefore Trump, because the two of them are really close buddies as well as everything else, that they really don't want any third party from the American side to hear what's going on, like not even a translator?
Well, it's very odd that, of course, they don't want their European allies at the table. They don't want Zelensky at the table, but they are, you know, eager to put themselves front and center at negotiations to bring an end to the war in Ukraine, even though the Americans are not supplying now the bulk of the financial aid or indeed the military aid to Ukraine. But Trump is eager to be at the center of the negotiation process. And we have to ask ourselves, of course, why he's particularly optimistic about the prospects for this summit. I mean, he first telephoned Vladimir Putin, at least that's his public statement, shortly after becoming president for the second time. And he was saying that they were going to enter into negotiations and there was a momentum. And 6 months later, we can now look retroactively and see that Putin was just simply playing for time, that every time there was this kind of meeting between either Witkoff and Putin or a phone conversation between Trump and Putin, that Putin would say, of course, that he was interested in bringing the war to an end and then follow it by an escalation of missile strikes and drone strikes into Ukraine. I was in Ukraine myself just over a month ago, and there was an unprecedented level, more than any time during the full-scale invasion, of missile and drone strikes, over 500 in a single night. And that happened after Putin had engaged with Trump. So Trump doesn't seem to get the message that Putin is not interested in a negotiated settlement. And of course, then we have to ask ourselves, why is it that it's obvious to Zelensky that Putin is bluffing when it comes to a negotiated settlement? And it's obvious to European leaders, why it's not obvious to Trump?
Well, maybe it is obvious to Trump, but he's so compromised by his relationship with Russia, whether it's with Putin himself or other forces within Russia, vis-a-vis the 2016 election and real estate deals. And because he is all about money, 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 money. And he may well have left himself open to compromise.
Well, I mean, what we know is that he's a man in a hurry, and he speaks in terms of weeks and days, and he's very eager for a deal. Whereas, you know, Putin is a man who is thinking in years and in decades, and that works very much to Putin's advantage when it comes to negotiations. I mean, as it would in any type of negotiations. And it is very much, of course, to Ukraine's disadvantage. So we don't know why exactly. We can't pin down why exactly Trump echoes the Kremlin's core concerns, because, you know, if you look back again at the last few months, he has called Zelensky a dictator. He has not called Putin a dictator. He has said that, you know, essentially Ukraine is to to blame for the conflict. He has said that NATO enlargement is also a core reason. He's avoided blaming Russia, even though Russia is obviously at the core of this when we talk about Russia's full-scale invasion. So why he echoes these concerns, we can only speculate. But they are long-standing. They even go back to before he was president.
Now, the question of what Putin ultimately wants, I mean, that dream of restoring the Soviet empire is certainly, it's what he wants, but it is beyond him, I think, in terms of his age and maybe even the economic wealth that Russia possesses. It's probably beyond them to recreate the Soviet empire.
Well, you would think that, but then if that logic was to apply, then they wouldn't have invaded in February of 2022. They would have rationally appraised that a country the size of Ukraine couldn't be emasculated overnight or so quickly. But, you know, this is the problem of living in a dictatorship, that you are surrounded by people who will tell you what you want to hear, that you have a world-class military which can do whatever it wants. Now, certainly, you know, the experience of the last 3.5 years in Ukraine have modified that particular ambition. But it's not clear that, you know, in reality, they have given up completely on, you know, expanding their influence in Eastern Europe.
Now, the question at the end of the day is what might come of this first meeting. And Trump is already talking about we'll have a second meeting very quickly after the first one. I'm there to listen to what Putin has got to say. Now, as you pointed out, normally all that kind of work is done by diplomats, and presidents and prime ministers get briefed, very effectively briefed, by those who truly understand what is going on. In this case, is Trump going to be kind of at the mercy of Putin?
I think he is going to be potentially outflanked. All previous meetings between Trump and Putin have, you know, led to the situation where, you know, Putin has gained more from the meeting than Trump. In fact, people like John Bolton, who were, you know, core to the first Trump administration, have said that when it came to meetings with Putin, the meeting was an end in itself. That, you know, Putin, Trump didn't have any clear objectives that he wanted to achieve as a result of the meeting, whereas Putin would go in with a long list of demands and grievances, which he expected to be heard and indeed accommodated as a result of a meeting. There was no similar coherence to what Trump was looking for. And unfortunately, we kind of see a repetition of that now, where, as I said, in the course of just a few days, we've seen, you know, Trump's objectives modified in real time, depending on who he's met. So, as I said, he's met the European leaders yesterday, and now he's talking about no longer land swaps, but just a listening mechanism. But we have to ask ourselves, if this is just a listening meeting, why that can't be done by telephone? I mean, like, they've had telephone conversations in the past. What is it about, you know, this particular week that he thinks that Putin is going to say something to him in person that he hasn't said to him already in their face-to-face meetings on Zoom, for example?
Meantime, as we speak, Zelensky is in number 10 Downing Street. What do you think is the purpose of that visit?
I think it's to illustrate and to underline that Zelensky has support throughout Europe. As I said, it was very important that when Trump spoke with the European leaders in Berlin, that Zelensky was there, that he was not away from the table, as it were. And of course, he's moving further westwards by moving to the United Kingdom. So we don't know whether he's ready, he's on standby to go to Washington, D.C. or indeed Alaska, if there is, by Trump's view, a successful outcome. Because he has said, of course, that if he views the meeting with Putin to be successful, that he is interested in meetings taking place with Zelensky, either Putin and Zelensky or perhaps Trump and Zelensky. Again, he's quite unclear about it, but it's all based on the vibes that he gets from the meeting with Putin tomorrow, which will be very brief. I mean, we're talking about maybe an hour. Maybe the presidents will spend alone. There will be a longer, of course, sessions, you know, before that. But, you know, to overcome the great difficulties through translation, it must be added, in such a short space of time, when these issues have eluded seasoned negotiators over many years, if not decades, is, I think, baseless optimism, which again brings us back to what is this summit all about? Is it about Donald Trump presenting himself to the world as this arch dealmaker who brings peace to previously, you know, war-torn countries? Or is it actually designed to achieve concrete objectives?
Well, it's a fascinating time we are living through. And you've been writing about this, of course, in your book, Unfinished Empire, Russian Imperialism in Ukraine and the Near Abroad. And the final question prompted by that is whether or not this is just Putin, and when Putin passes, which he will do inevitably, are there others who share that that ambition?
Oh, for sure there are, but we don't know who will emerge after Putin. This is the problem with analyzing dictatorships, and I've been doing that for many years. Indeed, I've lived in dictatorships. And one thing I can say from that experience of over a quarter century is that, you know, nobody is allowed to develop into a number two or a number three in a dictatorship. If you emerge as a clear successor, that's, you know, that's the time that you start getting out a life insurance policy because your days are numbered. So we don't know who will emerge after Putin. It could be anyone on the political spectrum, somebody more hardline, somebody, you know, more conciliatory towards Europe. But it's certainly not the people who have, you know, political positions now around Putin. It's not, for example, Sergei Lavrov, you know, Putin's longtime foreign minister. People's positions in dictatorships depend on their closeness to the president in terms of their relationship, not on the formal position that they hold. And that's why, again, you know, these autocracies are so predictable. And it's why we're in such a fluid and dangerous situation, because even if you go back to the Cold War, we can look back with a certain degree of nostalgia. I say that somewhat tongue in cheek, to the fact that we had an Iron Curtain, because there was a clear demarcation in Europe beyond which the Soviet dictatorship would not go. We have no such guarantees with Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin is open-ended in this respect. For him, anywhere where there was a Russian soldier previously in Russian history is potentially future Russian territory. And that makes, as I said, any of his neighbours, you know, very worried about their prospects in the future.
Donato Bahoin, Professor of Politics at DCU, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
News Talk Breakfast with Kira Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR
on News Talk.